Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Awakenings with Michelle Mache, the weekly dose of spiritual and metaphysical insights and information for navigating the soul path. During the show, if you would like to call in for a reading or with comments or questions, call 347-539-5122 and press 1 on the keypad, or join the Sacred Space of Empowerment live chat. Create a username by registering with Blog Talk Radio. It's great to connect with all of you here.
Woohoo! Hello, everyone. Welcome to Awakenings, the podcast that gets you through the shifts and change of awakenings and converging flow. And there's Yoshi saying hello.
Hi, boo-boo.
Well, I'm your host, Michelle Mache. If you kind of stumbled in, surfed in, welcome to Awakenings. If you're a first-time listener, we want to welcome you with loving arms, etheric hugs, and if you're one of our regulars, always love seeing you here as well. Saying hi to everyone in the chat, and hello also everyone listening later via iTunes and the BTR icons. Okay, so let's see who's coming in the chat. Got a few, Tamara, Lara, Denise, and welcome guests as well. All right, so we've got a great program. We've got Greg Bogart, who's joining us later. Got an interesting blend of Jungian psychology, dream work, self-healing, and astrology. We all love astrology. And so we'll be diving in the company of sages. And we'll also be talking about his book on dream work and self-healing. It's a research project. You all know I'm a fan of dream work. It's one of my teachers years and years ago said it's the soul talking to us, and I so believe that. It's our dreams, the symbol, the sign, are what leads us. And part of waking up, becoming more aware, allowing more consciousness through us as us, is learning how to read the messages, the signs, the symbols, the messages of our soul. Anyway, so today I'm like totally, there's some things, some email questions and stuff that I wanted to get to, and I totally got caught up in my emails and writing. So I looked up and it's like 11:58. I'm like, oh my God, I'm making my decaf cappuccino. Still doing, those of you that have been joining me, still doing a bit of my cleanse, and I'm just on a 15-day juice fast, and juice fast and cleanse. Some of you have been seeing my Instagram pictures on that or posting on Facebook, and I'm doing back to my years ago. I mean, for many years I did this. Every Monday I would just clear out or clean out and just do just all juice the whole day. And sometimes maybe a protein, putting some protein powder in the juice. And depending on what I was feeling and what my blood sugar was doing, you know. And the thing is, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me about this, you know, my juicing. And even back in the day when I was, I tend to have the system that can do it. Even when I was a model and an actress, you know, that was all I was doing, traveling around the world and da-da-da-da. And I was racing at the time and working out quite a bit, doing yoga, very, you know, just I was doing 10Ks and dancing. I still, my body could handle, you know, some people can't. So what I would say to anybody, especially those of you that have been messaging me on this, you have to, you know, trust your body and what it needs, know your body. And I do think altering our routine, and I'm talking right now of food, but it's not just food. Because some of you knew I was doing a little getting rid of things, cleansing. So I like to do that every now and then, and especially when I feel that changes are coming or I'm going in a new level or I need more clarity to understand my own growth and my next level. I like to release some things that I'm doing, you know, maybe it's don't have my little wine, you know, I don't have, you know, maybe don't go out as much or maybe watch different kinds of programs on my Netflix or DirecTV that are going to move me in a different direction. You know, sometimes I'll watch a lot of international things or biographies, or lately to pick up back on my Spanish, used to be quite fluent. I've been watching a lot of more international programs that I have to use the language. So I stretch, you know, and I get this kind of from some of my other artist friends that either I work with as clients or just friends, that when they're using one medium, and I would say this for a lot, because we have a lot of artists that listen to this program as well, and a lot of, you know, innovators, inventors, a lot of creatives, that sometimes we get stuck in one mode. And to change it up helps new energy. It's new energy coming in. You know, a lot of times people have stagnation, and this is my big thing. There's a big difference between going deeper, which seems like stagnation to some people, or that they're stuck. A lot of times, right, we get callers calling in and saying, oh, I'm stuck, and then I tune in. It's like, no, you're not stuck. You're being required to go deeper, or, you know, the time is not right for whatever it is that you're wanting to do. You know, that's the hangman. That's the hangman in the tarot. And the hangman is about getting a different perspective. In fact, if you look at the body-mind connection, when you do have, you know, get the hangman, it's a good idea to even do like downward facing dog. Yep. I will do that a lot if I'm not sure. I feel things are, if I feel I'm stuck. So I know the difference. So stuck is when we are keeping ourselves very different. Stuck is when you keep doing the same thing over and over and over in the same way, and you're not, and you're resistant to the new influences that are coming in. Now, here's the thing. Let's see. Denise is in the chat. I got my tea. Here's the thing. If you do not know how to tune into yourself and trust your intuition, or you're not either working with somebody great. I mean, obviously working with a great coach, therapist, guide, whatever. That's a must, I think, on anybody's path. But also having friends, colleagues that know the path well. They have tools and they can reflect back to you. I gotta tell you, not only for my sanity, and I think I'm a little crazy, the starseed, I'm a little out there. But even on this podcast, you guys don't let me get away with stuff. Whether you put it in the chat and you know who you are, or you email me, you know, sometimes, I'm sorry to say this, Michelle, but I think this or that, or people doing my, you know, this is what I love about my clients too that I work with. They can be a bit confrontive. Now, sometimes it's just the resistance, but I'm all for it. I'm like down on the mat for it. Like the rest, I'm down. Let's do it. Let's go. And to say, hey, I don't like that. Or, you know what? I'm not feeling this at all. Or this is too hard. Or what are you doing? Or I'm not ready for this. Or I don't understand this. Let me just tell you, take a look at your friends. And if you have, it's just like with the, you know, it's just like with celebrities, you know, they say they've got the yes people. If your friends are telling you yes all the time, something's off. If they're not pointing out certain things to you so that you can grow. Because we surround ourselves with where we want to go, what we want to do. So if you want to grow and glow, you know, glow in your growing, you know, grow in your transformation. If you want to dive into more of life and connecting more to your soul's purpose, then you need to open that the people or life situations are going to challenge you sometimes, or you're going to have some little bleak periods or uncertainty. You know, a very good friend of mine has been doing the same thing for many, 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 many years. And we've been having this discussion because they think that I'm blaming, that I'm this naysayer of this certain project and group that he's involved in. And I said, it's not that, but what I do see is people get in with, you know, groups could be religious groups. I've seen it in every group, every institution, whether you call it a cult, religious institution. People or friends are a sense of group. Families do this together too, you know. It's this group agreement out of fear of loss, you know, out of fear of the unknown, to keep the status quo. It's very egocentric. It's inner child centric. It's also the transcendent, transpersonal, as well as existential, wanting to belong, so that we dim our light, we stop our growth process to stay in a certain mode with a certain focus, because that's got us our laurels. Now, some of you, especially if you're a lot of Aquarius in your chart, you know, there's certain people that just don't do that. Now, there's a other flip side to this polarity that isn't so healthy. It's just jumping in something and jumping out, change for change. And that's not what I'm speaking of, but I'm speaking of the very challenging and difficult, but extremely rewarding process of really getting to know yourself, the deeper self, you know. And probably Greg will be speaking to this, because you know, we've also got a background, some similar background, which I love. And one piece is having connected with Muktananda. So it's you have to look every now and again at your environment to see, is it supporting growth or stagnation? And again, staying in the same place or feeling like you're not going anywhere, but if you're using the tools, if you're using the processes, projection, perception, five-step emotional clearing process. These are on my website, by the way, selfandlight.com. Meditation, contemplating, reflecting, looking at, tuning into yourself, communing with your sacred self. Do I like to do now? Something's changing. See, very often when we start feeling that way, we start getting busy, 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 or reinforcing. You know, and I hear a lot of my clients say, well, I can't afford to do that. I can't, well, you know what? I can't afford it. You know, what they're saying is, I'm not trusting. I'm not trusting my higher self. I'm not trusting myself. I'm not trusting the process. I'm not trusting God. This, however you want to put it, the all that is, because that nudge is coming from a higher or deeper place. It's coming from the place that already knows the answer. And I do recognize some people are able to do this better than others, or more easily. I don't know if I'd say better, but more easily or readily. But we all, even me, and I consider myself pretty expert in this, you know, having given up successful career, moved on to something else, go back to school, you know, live, you know, across the globe, travel, you know, I really listened. I've not listened a couple times and they were doozies. So I try, but the thing that I got to tell you, everybody, that has helped me so much is not so much me, to be honest. It's the people I surround myself with. It's the people around me that, whether they've worked with me or they've worked with someone else, they have the tools and they can reflect back to me that other part, the part that believes. When the part of me that doesn't believe or doesn't understand or is scared is showing up, which is okay that it shows up, we just don't particularly want it running the show. I have amazing people around me that reflect back and say, you know, Michelle, what about da 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 da? Or you said when your chest opens, your heart opens, there's more resonance, there's coherence, and that's the direction to go in. But when you're feeling collapsed in, that's you're operating from fear. And when I'm talking to you right now, I'm seeing your shoulders collapse in. Oh, really? Oh, is it? Yeah, your shoulders are collapsing in, Michelle. You're kind of concaving in, you know, and your energy is dropping. And what I've heard and what I've learned from you and other people is when you're talking about something and your energy is dropping, that means it's not life-enhancing enough. There's not enough resonance there for you. And it's like, ooh, yeah, you're right. You know what? So I would say to everybody, can you open to having people around you that are spiritual warriors, you know, spiritual healers, lovers, you know, that are doing it also. It's because I see, you know, and I see this too, and I learned this from a wonderful, you know, a lot of people here, you know, Dr. Beverly Martin, Dr. Dehan, there's been a couple really stellar people that I've had in my life, Mr. Campbell, mentors, Donna Jesus, Donna Chui, Swami Muktananda, Guru Mai, there's more, but I'm just going to say those right now, that have taught me some amazing things. And one of them was, because when I was studying to be a counselor, and, you know, I used to have the thing like, wow, somebody could be working with some 10, 20 years and doing counseling, or I'd say, well, they're in therapy, they must be getting it. But there's a resonance, right? And a few of my teachers taught me that a therapeutic relationship is just like anything else, that you can get a therapist that lets you be stuck. Yeah. So we can do anything. The ego is beautiful, but when it's constructed ego and it's operating out of fear, it can surround yourself with people and situations and points of view that seem to be doing something or getting you somewhere. And not that there's any particular destination except for the unfolding one or the circular one. And we all know what I'm talking about here. So we can all do that. We can surround ourselves with people and a situation that seems to be very confirming of us right where we are, and so that we stay stuck. And again, I was saying I see this a lot of times in certain groups. People, I'm a big believer of a weaver, that we need to connect with other people, because our soul group or our soul tribe is not just, it's not a specific group. Because you'll meet people, part of your soul tribe, other soul travelers such as yourself, in many groups. There will be a common thread or theme, because it operates by resonance. But many people misinterpret that, and so they operate from the human belonging button, the deficit of I don't belong, and it's scary out there. So that's when we get into these labels, right? You know, I'm a Scientologist, I'm a burner, I'm a Jehovah Witness, I'm a born again. I only hang out with born agains. I only do business with born agains. I only do business with burners. Oh, no, they're not a burner. No, they don't burn. They're not a burner, you know. I hear that all the time because of the world that where I live. What I hear in that is separation, the labeling. You know, we have to have titles and labels to some degree because people are trying to connect with us. But to the degree that we do that, we are creating more separation and a preconceived idea of what something means. And that's why I say the more awake, the more aware you are, you can be sitting at a table with socialites and diplomats or hardcore burners, bikers. You could be in a biker bar, and you could be having tea, you know, in the Sophie Hotel or the Drake, you know, or in England. You could be doing yoga, you could be skateboarding. You see what I'm saying? You are allowed to morph. And that is one of the great lessons in this Aquarius Leo access of the great awakening that we're in. The Piscean air, God love it, we need it. We need to understand individuality and how it unfolds in the context of the group. And it was the sacrifice for the group. The Piscean era was a lot of group identification, right? You can see it. So many groups and institutions were started. But the problem is when people start identifying that is them and only that is them, and people that are not part of that are not in it. You know, and unfortunately I see sometimes in the yoga community, they're not a yoga. Oh, they don't do yoga. Oh, you do weights and you run. Oh, no, I only do yoga. You know, no, they're not vegan. They're not vegetarian. No. They eat meat, right? Right. You know, only raw food. Now, I'm not saying don't have those likes, don't have those proclivities, because that's your individuality. That's your individuated aspect of the all that is coming through, right? So it's a blend in this awakening, the age of light, the age of the Aquarius, of the individual, that Leo energy coming in, but not at the expense of the group, but not the group at the expense of the individual. And to, by the way, to have less, yes, less labeling to show up. Let me tell you, when you're in the meditative state, you are not labeling. You just are. You just show up and you just be. You know, lately, you know, and I learned this from some of my teachers and my learnings back in when I was overseas, you know, when I was studying in England, living there in England and France and traveling around. I lived a little bit in Italy. I learned there, you know, and I will say it's more of a, I hate to say that's more of a quote unquote American thing, a United States thing. We have it bad here. I really realized when I showed up, I would know people for 2-3 months and they didn't ask what I did. They didn't, you know, back in the day, everybody had the business card, right? Not in Europe. I don't even have one. I'm not against them. I guess the point I'm trying to say is the more that you are living in the meditative state, the more you're connected to the soul, the less you're going to feel the need to be called a certain something or something. You know, we have to do it. I hashtag on Instagram, but sometimes I think, God, I could have 200 plus hashtags because I'm so many different things at so many different times. And some of us are like that. So those of you that are, what I'm suggesting is how can you embrace that more and not try to pin yourself down? I mean, I remember years ago I was interviewed in this little magazine, Society magazine paper, and I don't even say what thing. And the woman, she even put in there, dancer, model, psychic, actor, you know, there was like 10 things, you know, and it's like, oh, and a poet, she writes poetry, you know. That's okay. You know, you don't, you're not, your label. You express through, these are ways of expressing yourself. So if you want to change, if you want more soul connection and more soul growth, you need to look around and see who and what you're surrounding yourself with. Tune in. You know, write yourself a question before you go to sleep so that you can get the answer in the dream state. Or maybe go into contemplation meditation or reflection. Or just meditate. Or just put the telepathic word out. Show me what's right for me on my path right now. What's the highest good? What's right action for me? What do I need to focus on? What do I need to bring into my life or allow into my life? What do I need to integrate now? Doing that in that meditative state will start drawing that to you and be open enough to let it in instead of resisting it because of the packaging. You know, maybe it's not coming in a vegan packaging. Maybe it's coming as a meat eater, but it's what you need now. You know, maybe it's not coming as a burner, but it's what you need now. It's not coming as a sannyasin. You know, it's those of you that are athletes, you know, elite athletes, maybe it's not coming as an elite athlete. Maybe it's coming as somebody that seems to be a little out of shape or normal body type, right? But however it's coming is what you need. It's the rejection of it that keeps you stuck. Because the soul is always sending the messages to the higher self. Always, always, always. We're getting the directive. And we need to be aware whether we're labeling ourselves into a limited expression of ourselves, a limited viewpoint. Even here's an example. Even if you're doing the same thing, you need to find new ways of doing it and or open to other influences. If you want to grow, if you want more of your soul's expression to come through as you, you need to open more to the fullness of life and what you're receiving. Now, sometimes we don't know what we're receiving because that requires slowing down. That requires taking a quiet moment, some time out, to not only look around, but and see, but to feel what is of most resonance for me right now. You know, what is the message here? Is this something being mirrored to me? Is this a projection? Is this a reflection of where I'm to go? Or is this a reflection of where I've been or what I need to let go of? Is this a reflection of something I need to integrate? Is this an example for me? So these kinds of questions happen in those slower, softer moments in our life. And it doesn't have to take hours, doesn't even have to take a half hour, but it is setting aside the time, you know, allowing the time, creating the space, so that deeper part of you can come through and guide you, so that it can lead that part of you that might be a little fearful of change. And all unknown, all change, there's an unknown aspect to it. And that unknown aspect brings fear. And this is why people don't venture out of their little routine, their little group or large group, because of the fear of the unknown, because there's a shaky part, right? There's a little shaky, uncertain part. But one way you can reframe that is, instead of saying, I'm in fear of this, I'm excited for this. Instead of, I'm apprehensive about the unknown, I'm waiting for that other shoe to drop, it's like, no, I'm excited. I have a positive, I have a happy expectation, a joyful. I know something good is coming around. So that anxiety can then turn to excitement. It doesn't have to be something that holds you back. Okay, shall we get to callers? Yeah, Denise, unknown aspect brings fear. Yes, 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 yes. That's where the unknown, because the unknown, we don't know how to respond. And so actually to the limbic part of our brain, it signals not as much survival, that something's off, something, but that something off may just be that it's something new. It's something we don't know. So when you, it's like going the same route all the time. You can go on autopilot. But when you're in the unknown, you can't be on autopilot. You have to feel things out. That's why I suggest to people, even driving or walking or taking the subway or train or whatever, a bus, a different route when you're wanting to change. When we have more power than what you think. Part of it is we stop ourselves. We don't allow the new influences in. We don't allow ourselves to do something new. We get in these ruts. And when you're in a rut, the energy is no longer free-flowing, right? All right, callers, 347-539-5122. That's 347-539-5122. And please press 1 on the keypad, and that will get you into the queue, and I will contact you. How's that? All right, I love you guys. Yeah, give me a call, and we'll get to callers right now before our guest comes on the air. Okay, so I see some people in the queue, but you don't have you're not pressing 1 on the keypad, so I don't know. Like the 508-933, if you have a question, press the 651. Now we've got a private number here. I don't know. Let's just see. Is it Queen? I don't know. Who is it going to be? So here we are, 111. You're on air.
I am on air. You knew.
Yes, it is Queen.
How are you?
Oh, I am in a new unfolding and feeling that out and getting used to that. How's that?
It sounds good. It sounds like you're growing and evolving and, you know, exploring the vastness of all that there is to explore.
Yeah, another growth spurt.
Yeah,
another growth spurt.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it hurts. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, Tamara put in the chat, that's a great way to frame it. Yeah, because it's not good or bad, it just is. And when you're in that process, I'm really feeling it, what the process is of the unfolding. I'm also seeing, as I have in the past, but it's being highlighted to me even more, how we all stop our own unfolding, our own growth. Because that of just that paragraph of things that I said, you know, that Tamara said, great way to frame it when you said, how are you? people like to have how are you answered usually in a little phrase or one word, fine, or everything's good, okay. But when there's more words to describe what you're going through, people don't like to go in that area. They want to be fine, okay. So, anyway, my queen, how art thou?
Thou art.
Thou art. Thou art that I art, yeah.
And I like that you use the word unfolding. I like that.
Yes.
Because that's really, expressive of, the unfolding. Like I saw like an envelope and it unfolding, opening up. I like that. At use of that word at this moment in time. I am grateful that you are part of my soul group, my special family, and that you help me stay on my, path when it gets too crooked, because some paths are crooked at my son.
Yeah.
And so I called to see if you would give me some insight as to what I need to know as I journey on this journey of the trials, the literal trials I'm going through. And in terms of that, more information has been revealed, of course. And this should be a book. There are four people who are part of I'm going to call them a soul group, that have concocted a story that needs to be motive behind the story needs to be exposed. So any light that's been shed on that would be very, very, very acceptable.
It concocted something that needs to be, the thing that I'm getting with you, even with what you went through with the police, is you're moving into, and many are in a different way. And I will say we're having to really reframe a lot of what we think teaching is or leadership. Now, I feel for you, there's something to do with a leader or leadership and stepping out into that more and vibing, embodying that energy more. It might seem lonely or alone for a while, but then it does seem to be that you galvanize, or some people come to you in a shared way. The other thing I'm hearing, Queen, is now this is interesting, creating sacred space, not just for yourself, but for others. So if others at a fear, crises, time of going through something, have a place to come to. And I feel not just virtual, I feel that it's also an actual space, an actual place. And I see sofas around and pillows. You talking to someone. Do you do community work like that or outreach?
No, not at this time.
Okay. And what about groups at your house?
No.
Okay. Let me see, the place I'm seeing, do you have like a, I don't know if it's in, what I call it, indoor, outdoor patio, but like an enclosed patio, or there's something, veranda, enclosed in the back?
Not where I live.
Do you know this place that I'm talking about? It might be screened in porch in the back or something, but I see a lot of art stuff, art supplies, pottery. I don't know. There's sculpture. I don't know if it's something you're doing or somebody's doing. Maybe somebody's going to open a space up for you to do this.
As you were talking, I was thinking of an art center that I might be able to get access to. And even beyond that, I was thinking of a friend of mine has a spacious dance studio with an extra space around. That might be a place that I could, access for some things. So both of those things appeared.
Okay. Yeah, it's the sacred keeper. It's holding the space. That's what I'm hearing. It's about holding the space, creating the space. And I do see sometimes there's like potluck or something, food involved, and seeing some paper plates, people milling around. But there's definitely art. I can see art and actual working art, not just. So if there's a gallery, it's in the front, because where I'm seeing you and the other people, there's like artist tools and you know, things. So now on the other thing with the group, you're saying that they're concocting something and that needs to be brought to light or revealed. It needs,
yeah,
the thing I'm
unfolded,
hearing is,
unfolded, blown up. And this
well,
is,
yeah. The cover needs to be blown up.
Yes, the cover needs to be blown up, yes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing the guys are telling me is give some place for people to go. You don't necessarily have to be the blower-upper, but you can create the space. And you're bringing up a really, really, really dynamite point here that we all need to connect into. One of the things that I've been guided, because there is a lot of group, and I'll mention every now and then, I'm kind of doing it less, but I'll drop little hints about certain things that are really constructed ego, lower level, ego-based, you know, groups and doctrines and beliefs that really are not serving people, serving the whole. But the one thing that I've been getting more from the guides is that in the waking up, people are seeing those things not working, really working. And it's better or more in resonance or coherence of where we're evolving to in our consciousness, allowing more consciousness through to create other places for those people to go to rather than busting up the old. Now, there will be systems busters. There are those that are systems busters. But it's kind of like having two chairs. Which one's a little more cozy, maybe a little more real, but a little more cozy, people will start going to that. Now, right now, what people think is cozy are these quick fixes, you know, put up a positive affirmation, you know, you can have everything you want, da-da-da-da, you know, like attracts like. Well, that's not true. You're not all like, you know, you're not going to attract everything that you are, you know what I mean? So there's all these little snappy, quick cliches that people want to buy into because it seems easier. It seems easier than doing, as you know, Queen, you've been at this a long time, well, many of us, that if there was a quick fix, everybody would have had it already, you know, including us. So there are more people kind of understanding that and looking for that kind of understanding and guidance. That's where I keep seeing you come in. There is something with your art, your work, as well as even with music, but I'm not sure if you're blending that with your wisdom in connecting with people, and specifically groups. I don't know, even whether it's meditation, visioning, just beginning the group, you know, where you're at, and then even helping people in, you know, apprenticing, you know, with you. Mm-hmm. That's going to be your decision of how do you use that energy, that a very strong, there's Tara, there's the nurturing, but there's also this very strong cut through energy. And so it's going to be, I'd say the next 3, maybe 6 months at the most, that you're going to have major decisions as to where and how you want to use energy. What's the best, the most fulfilling for you? Because what I am hearing is don't try to do anything on your own. Were you thinking of confronting this group?
Well, actually, it's I have to deal with them. There's no getting away with
it. Oh, okay.
They have to be dealt with because this is part of the police situation. And the
right. Now, what? Okay, but it goes beyond that. Here's the thing. when we're talking energetically. So you are going to be making, you have to deal with them now, but on an inner level, you can have within the next 3 to 6 months the choice to not have to do that role or routine. And what I would say is work on the inner plane right now, especially while you're having to deal with them. There's, and I can just give you the gist of it. I've got this releasing meditation, the forgiveness meditation. Actually, it's on my YouTube channel, Light Being 21, as well as the Ascension meditation. But basically, you just get in alignment and you feel the connection that you have to the people in this situation, or even them as a group. Some of the individuals that you're connecting with, you can feel them and also them as a group. And feel the cords that are there, and then you just say, I release you from this role with me. So you do releasing, then you release yourself from the role. I release myself with this role with you. And then I release me from this role with me. I release and I let go. And work with the breath and keep doing that. Because what I feel is you have a choice. And many of us are moving into that space. Many have been since 2011. If you want to call them contracts, you know, blueprints, patterns, whatever, you have the choice to say, no, I don't want to go on this way. I want to change. You know, I've done enough of this. And then it just requires getting in resonance with what it is you do want, like really feeling maybe envisioning the kinds of situations you want to be in, and then connecting to the feelings of that within the body. Now for you, for going, that's, you know, intergalactic big picture. You know, if we're bringing it into what's happening on the human experience, you're talking about the people that lied about the money, right?
Exactly.
Them as a group. Yes. That they're a group that pulled this off. Yeah. Well, the thing that I'm hearing, and you're doing it now to a degree, is media. You know, talking to the media, letting people know what's going on. Boy, they're really, okay, they're still holding steadfast, right? They're still...
They have just been presented to me as the package. That had been withheld from me until like last Friday, so I'm just getting the whole picture from their story, and so I don't know that they, you know, as I move on with this to blow it up, to dissemble it, to bring the truth to light, I don't know that. They are going to hold that I feel like they are going to turn against each other. That's my feeling. Because lies have
probably already... if you bring it to light and expose is what I'm hearing, reveal, then yes, it will crumble. But it feels to be a network and not just local. Is that true?
That I don't know. It could be. Okay. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the network.
But they've done this before. What is the network I'm seeing then? It's just the network.
It could be. My sense is that as effective as they try to be, had I not spoken with you, and my timing been good, and a few other things that I just did in my normal process of going through life, then they would have been very effective and successful. But because certain things were put in place that they didn't anticipate, then, you know, so that's the thing. Plus, me being who I am and dealing, you know, on a spiritual level, they didn't figure that in either. That's really
exactly
a lot of what's happening.
And that's the big part of it. Your consciousness, that's a big part of it, your spiritual connection.
Truly. So that's my sense of what is gonna happen. But I just wanted you to look at it, and you validated what I was feeling. But even in terms of the art center, while you were talking, I was feeling that to include offering a class, but a class with meditation or you know, as part of the teaching, you know, while I'm teaching jewelry making or clay or painting, whatever.
That must have been in the clay that I'm seeing, yeah, the sculpting or whatever. But so, Queen, you're being required so to now choose where you want to show up and how, so that you don't have to be in this circumstance. Now, there's a lot of healing you're doing in this particular circumstance. And what it is, one of them, you know, is bringing to light. And, you know, not just reflecting that light, but bringing to light into that situation. Have you figured out what do they have to gain in this? Do you know?
No. Other than perhaps figuring that they could lock me up and get $700 from me. Now that might be what they had to gain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put me away and make me have to pay.
Make them the money.
Yeah. So that could be.
Yeah.
That could very well be it.
Yeah.
Lady in the pokey and you know, she'll have to pay us and that's it. However, there is something about them in child support. That just came to light Monday. That there's back child support and so that's part of it. I hadn't thought of it in terms of what they have to gain, because I can't. It's hard for me to wrap my head around why they would even do.
But you see, but it's the money. That's why. So I don't know if it's a network of other people or them, but that's the network. Some people, believe it or not, do those kinds of scammy things. Though it takes a lot of money, energy to get that little bit of money, they will do that. It's like, to me, like hackers, people that are like, okay, they're spending all this time, you know, which some of it is, you know, obviously productive and has helped us have things come to light. But the malicious ones, it's like, gosh, you're brilliant at this. Why put the energy into that? You know, and of course, it's some shadow material, but some people will put all that energy and effort in for something that is so... you're wondering why all the effort in that. But for them, that's a big deal, you know, kind of going over the system but so that they don't have to pay, getting over on something or someone. But I do feel, we have our time for our guests will be coming on. I do feel that it is about, there's a leadership position for you and work with your dreams, literal and figuratively, you know, the co-creative aspect as well as the dream messages that are coming through. And that art, that place that you're talking about sounds wonderful to start having some group connection, interaction there, support, you know,
I'm
meditation.
I'm going to act on that immediately. I'm going to act on that maybe when I get off the phone with
Yes, I love that. Yes. Definitely.
And what's the name of your YouTube page again?
Lightbeing21. And Tamara, thank you, Tamara, put in the chat. Lightbeing21. There's a couple meditations on my selfinlight.com. However, the forgiveness one that you can listen to, I don't know if you can download it, but you can listen to it. And also the focus meditation and ascension meditation are also on there. There's actually quite a few meditations on there. One essential method, that would be good too to shift this resonance. It shifts the resonance of what you're attracting. But you're moving out of that phase. I mean, you're moving out of having to experience this. I mean, although it's a hardship on you, it did bring light into that situation, you know.
Well, I thank you. I thank you so much for being there and for your words of wisdom and the sharing of your energy. And your message today was right on. And I'm going to go to the site and get this information and work on it and empower myself and ascend.
Yes, and out-create it. you know, make what the other stuff that you're doing so big and so energetic that it overrides this other stuff, that it's just like a spiritual steamroller, you know, that spiritual energy just flattens that situation out. All right, Queen, big hug. Keep us
posted.
All right, let's love the
mic. Namaste.
Namaste. Oh, wonderful. Whoa, so much change. Thank you, Tamara. Out-created. Yes, good for all of us going through the ringer. Yeah, it's kind of like a wonderful little spiritual diversion, yeah? Creating something bigger that kind of subsumes the other, you know? It not only balances it out, but kind of takes it over. All right, Awakenings listeners, we have our second half of the program, our Awakenings Dialogue. And today we have Greg Bogart on, who's an author, educator, psychotherapist, and astrological counselor. He's in the Bay Area. Greg has presented and published papers on Jungian studies and dream research and authored Dream Work and Self-Healing, as well as other books. A couple of his other books, Planets and Therapy, Astrology and Meditation, Astrology and Spiritual Awakening. For more information, you can go to gregbogart.net. I want to welcome Greg to the program. Welcome, Greg. Hey, great to connect.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. So, Greg, now, is there any way to speak a little louder on your phone? Either turn it up or move the...
Yes, perfect. Is that better?
Yes, love better. Love everything you're doing, I'll just say right off the bat. Love the background. A lot of it similar study and training and close to my heart. And I love the weaving that you've done in bringing the astrology into, and meditation as well, but into counseling and into healing and growth. And I think as well as the dream work, very powerful tools to all bring together. I think that they're synergistic in their combination. What I'd ask you now, a couple questions, but the first one is how did you embark on synthesizing this all together?
Well, it was an outgrowth of my own spiritual path, which started with a lot of studies of Hatha yoga and meditation. And then also in my teens and 20s, I started writing down dreams and thinking about them. And so that all started around the same time. And then I discovered astrology during a time of some confusion and uncertainty in my life, and it helped me steer myself through that. So I gained some interest in that in the early 1980s. And I was doing astrological counseling for a number of years before I realized I really needed more training as a counselor to be a therapist. I needed to go a lot more in-depth into psychology, so I sought that training out at the California Institute of Integral Studies and became a licensed marriage and family therapist. But for me, being a therapist, being an astrologer, they've always gone side by side, hand in hand, and the two complement each other really very well. So that's how it started.
Lovely. So let me ask your first awakening then. If you consider your awakening or first awakening really got you on a path and saying, wow, I'm really here to do something. I really, you know, healing yourself, but then saying I really want to help others. Mm-hmm.
It seems like the first awakening was when I was about 4 or 5 years old, when I started going into a bizarre state of consciousness as I lay down in bed, where I would go into another dimension of geometric forms, conical and pyramidal shapes. And then when I was a teenager and meditating with Swami Muktananda, I started to have the same experiences. And so the experience of deep meditation brought a crystal clarity and the realization that experience was a big part of my reason for being alive. And as I learned astrology, for example, in 1980, one, I quickly realized its important value was to be able to help people. In fact, my first major astrology teacher, Mr. Andres Takra, said, "Why do you want to be an astrologer?" And I said, "I want to help people." And he said, "That's right. That's the reason." And
I love that.
As we learn knowledge such as astrology that helps us understand where we are, what we're going through, the meaning of events, it's natural that we share that with others who are going through their own changes and to help them interpret and make meaning from events. So that's how it started for me.
Now, that's interesting. How important, I love what you're saying about this, making meaning of events. How important do you feel that is in our life? Is that really, and perhaps if it, you feel it is, why?
Well, many people think that in studying astrology, they're going to be able to predict everything that's going to happen. And that's not so much how I approach it or think about it, but more the ability to understand where I am, what it means. Even difficulties that I'm going through can be understood as phases of a process that is a lesson, is teaching. Even if it's a teaching about letting go or endings, I can accept that. I can be at peace and tranquility as I go through various challenges if I understand their meaning. If I understand them in the light of archetypes, mythic structures, universal patterns of experience. And that's what astrology is about, and that's also what dream work is about as well.
You know, as you're saying that, I thought that it truly does not only give meaning, but as you were talking, I thought it makes the world, the universe, I feel a more loving place. It's you know, because sometimes people say, "Oh, you know, this is happening to me," but if we can understand why something is going on, we don't look at it adversarially or some, you know, the world, God, you know, why me? They're doing something to me. But there's this wonderful unfolding, you know, that's happening. I can see why through what you're saying, it does bring more peace and more connection, more interconnectedness to everything and every, you know, one around us, actually. So it gives us, I never really thought of it, but it does sound, it's quite important to really have that meaning or understanding and ways of understanding.
Yes, it really does. It helps generate compassion for oneself and also appreciation of the struggles others are going through. That's the thing. We're all going through challenges. The Buddha said we're all dealing with some suffering, some loss, some sorrowfulness.
Yeah.
But if we can...
And you go...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and you talk about this in your book, In the Company of Sages, where you're looking actually at, which I love, the emotional component, you know, of relationships or mentoring relationships, the journey. The mystic journey of self-transformation, which is what so many of us are on. Many people are on, but they're not aware of it. Whether you're cognizant or not, you're on the ride, you know?
Yes. Well, the purpose of this book, In the Company of Sages, is to closely examine the dynamics of having a teacher, having a spiritual guide. What does it mean to approach such a relationship and then mature within it, and maybe at some point outgrow it and move on? And then on the other side, for those who are growing into roles of leadership, what does it mean to be a teacher and a guide for others? What are some of the challenges and major responsibilities? And so to bring light to the human part, the emotional nuances of the student, teacher, guru, disciple, yoga, you know, aspirant, and guide relationship.
You know, it's interesting, you know, we're having this discussion now. There's always such a synchronicity, obviously, to every program to our guests. But at the top of the program, I was really talking about and sharing on precisely this, how important it is to have a therapist, spiritual guide, teacher, what, you know, and also have surround yourself with people that have, you know, the tools that they can reflect back to you, you know, in your growing, you know, that they're not keeping you stuck out of fear of loss, you know, and that goes even in that mentoring therapeutic relationship, you know, to allow the growth, even like you said, even if it's outgrowing or growing differently. And one of the things I commented on, one of the reasons I've been able to do such tremendous growth and life-changing experiences wasn't really because of me. It was because of my teachers and the people I surrounded myself with, you know, with what they were able to help me with or reflect back to me. And I see a little dip in this. I call myself old school in this sense, that whole idea of apprenticing or the teacher-student, guru-teacher. Like even on the show, I call myself pilot, co-pilot, you know, that whole synergistic took a dip. I feel like it's coming back because people are realizing perhaps it doesn't have to be codependent. You're not giving the power away. There's a healthy way to do it. Do you see, Greg, a resurgence of this or and perhaps maybe even an understanding of this type of relationship and process?
I think it's timeless. And mm-hmm. I think in the 1970s and 80s, maybe into the 90s, it became even more a cultural trend for a lot of people to
yes.
seek out spiritual teachers and have a fascination mm-hmm. with them. And then there was a backlash as some of them disappointed us, as some of them misbehaved, were less than
mm-hmm.
examples when you really examined them. So I believe, yes, there was maybe a lukewarm attitude towards the whole idea of a spiritual teacher. But I don't think it ever goes away because people have a longing for the spirit, a longing to know, a longing for illumination. And they come to realize that that's passed on person to person. There's a transmission of knowledge, technique, of being, of love. And so we resiliently seek it out. From various sources, and some of them provide just a little bit of guidance in meditation or yoga practice or some other technique, and then we move on. And others have such a deep emotional and spiritual impact on us that we remain attentive to them over years or decades.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. So I never thought of that. I guess that was the disappointment, because I did see, you know, I've always been a proponent of it, not just being in that facilitating, being in that capacity, but always working with someone, especially if I'm going to what I always call my own next level. You know, it's like I see it coming and it's like, hey, you know, help, guidance. But there was that dip, this kind of I can do it all on my own, or I don't need that, or, you know, kind of a, you know, a shooing of it even. And it seems now that in this rung of the awakening that people are more, I agree with it, never went away, but I feel like it's coming back into a broader understanding and involvement, just like people have, you know, trainers or workout coaches or nutritionists or doc, you know, it's the same. I guess what I'm saying is we're not meant to do it all on our own or alone. And specifically, I feel in the path of transformation, soul growth, self-transformation, the transpersonal, it's hard to because you don't see your blind spots. You know, they're blind a lot of times, you know. You know, even the ones that are revealed in meditation, but on a consistent level, that and even that transmission of, you know, chakti or chi that's transmitted, that information and the energy around it and the will to go on further happens in that relationship so well. Is that one of the reasons you wrote the book? Did you see
I wrote the book to regenerate this tradition, to revive enthusiasm for this path and this tradition of transmission of student-teacher mentoring on the spiritual path, and to examine certain challenges we faced as Americans raised in a tradition of individualism and democracy. So, for example, we've got the Asian traditions that kind of emphasize surrender, submission, you know, unquestioning obedience to authority, and that was the paradigm for the relationship with a spiritual guide. But here we are, Americans, who are somewhat skeptical and individualistic, and we want to be able to question everything. And so we're not going to be able to easily accept a spiritual lineage or mode of instruction that demands a kind of mindless submission. So we have to work that out. People who are spiritual teachers in our environment have to be more willing to engage in dialogue, to look at their own shadows, to not expect other people to bow slavishly to them without their constantly demonstrating their integrity and authenticity. And so there's a new challenge for teachers to be in the fire and to prove themselves worthy of the respect or interest or devotion of others.
So I love that. Being in the fire, the need to be, I would say there's no grand poobahs, there's no pedestal. And I think, that being in their own path and process continually, I think, is so important. Not just as a demonstration, but you know, vibrationally, energetically, to be in that. And do you find that changing in your research? Do you find that more teachers are, as you say, staying in the fire, getting in the fire, you know, not afraid to roll around in their own mud and be honest about it?
I can't really say. I can say that several teachers have been challenged by their followers or students, and some of them have gotten very defensive, and others have owned up to certain mistakes. And I think of Yogi Amrit Desai, who had some problems and was actually asked to leave his own community. But he's made a comeback, you know. He did more work on himself and is slowly, he's teaching again. And he's a lot to offer. And so I can't say whether more teachers are staying in the fire, but I think American practitioners are interested in the psychological dimension of growth, and it is helpful for teachers working in our context, in our environment, to have a certain awareness of the shadow, a certain humility, and maybe dropping. Some of the attitude of, imperial authority.
Yes, I would agree. You know, and that is and I've been in some of, studying with Muktananda, I've been on some of the groups you've been in and others. And the one thing that I always see holds people back, whether it's the other students, practitioners, administration, and because I'm usually as a practitioner or teacher, so I'm seeing, but I see behind the scenes, is that the emotional, psychological aspect is not brought in. There's no psychological help or training or very little to none, usually none for some reason. What is that about? There's nothing about emotions. People just, it's only spiritual.
So you were in yoga also?
Yes.
All right. So that was exactly the case there. So that's why we need the psychology. We need psychotherapy. We need the understanding of developmental phases and tasks. And there's great value for spiritual awakening in understanding the basic stages of ego psychology, ego development, and doing work.
Ego development. I love this. So why, this is the question I've always had, because I have training in both too, and I have had really good teachers, so, working on the shadow, and I don't see something that people I work with do, or my friends, so it's, but why wasn't that included? That's the one thing I've never understood, and I've even in some of these systems or groups have suggested, people have even said, you got this clearing work or emotional repatterning or this or that, and why can't we, use that? And the people at the top usually just eschew it. They just think they stopped. And I could never figure out how could that have been left out, something so important, such an important aspect of it.
wasn't part of Sufism. It wasn't part of Tibetan Buddhism or Zen Buddhism. It wasn't part of Hindu yoga. It wasn't part of, you know, Jewish and Christian mysticism.
But any of it, okay, Jewish, okay, because we go back, because even New Thought, even those, you know, Church of Religious Science, you know, like we can go, I can go on and on and on. You get in there and that is like so, it's not even missing. It's like just almost not heard of, unless some people get it a little bit from the outside, but usually the group, the doctrines or principles or the courses don't support that, or they skim the surface. And they definitely don't support it with the administrators and the people at the top, the leaders, quote unquote leaders. Do you think it's what I'm hearing you say, it's the traditions, even hundreds, thousands of years ago, where it kind of all began, because it wasn't in there, it didn't get in as we evolved it even in contemporary times. It still gets missed.
A lot of times it does. I mean, there are exceptions. There are systems that are trying to meld Western developmental psychology with mystical psychology, spiritual psychology. Mm-hmm. For example, the Diamond Heart work of Almas is just one example of a system that encompasses both. And various people in the transpersonal psychology field, such as John Wellwood or others, who are trained in both ways. And so that's what I try and do. One of my teachers, Brian Wittin, you know, he's a mystical meditator, but he's also a psychoanalyst. So both together. So I think that's the synthesis I'm interested in. What's the place of meditation, yoga, and pranayama? And then what's the place of dealing with your issues about work, money, sex, and intimacy, and family? Mm-hmm. I think all of that is integral to transformation.
Yeah. Well, because we're here. We're on the earth. That's kind of what we're here to be focusing on. So you're doing it, okay, you're obviously doing it through your books, and which you have quite, which is amazing. So people can get that support there. Your websites, you have two, gregbogart.net, and then you had another one.
The other website is dawnmountain.com, D-A-W-N, dawnmountain.com, where you can read about the different books and different reviews and how to order them.
Okay. So you've got the books, and obviously in your private practice. Now, what about workshops or groups? That's one question. And then how, or do you have a vision of how this could be synthesized maybe even to already existent social networks or groups?
Sure.
That's possible.
Well, the answer to your question is I teach college courses. So I teach undergraduates. I teach some graduate courses. But those are really the only groups I lead on a consistent basis. I will be teaching at the New York Open Center in December.
Oh, great.
Everybody's back there. But mostly I do private work with individuals, couples, and families in my Berkeley office. And then the writing is intended to provide tools for self-help, self-growth, so that one finds, you find your own way. You work with certain things, you work with the unconscious, you work with the breath, you free the breath, free the spine, free the mind. You work with your own yoga practice. So, and then astrologically, you study your own chart and try to work out your own roadmap. So that's what I do. I offer sessions to help people with their understanding of their birth chart, their transits, to understand what's happening to them now, and also to understand dream symbolism and what those are bringing up, and what tasks the dreams reveal. And in terms of how I see this becoming implemented or integrated into existing social institutions, I do that as a managed care psychotherapist. So people who have their list of providers from their insurance company, if they find me, I'm going to give them some tools to help them with their depression or anxiety that don't involve medications. If they have medications from a doctor, that's fine, but I want to give them something in addition to that or something else. And so I work with a variety of methods of yoga, meditation, breath work, visualization, psychosynthesis, dreams, and astrology.
Synthesis. The parts processing and aspect. Yeah, that's great, great stuff. So let me ask you, we had one question come in. Do you work by phone or Skype? I'm not in the Bay Area. Actually, there's some people in the New York area. Maybe I will go to the open.
I do work by phone, and I can work by Skype too. Sure, either one.
Okay, great. So with the college courses, now I'm curious what you're delivering there. What is the focus of those courses?
Well, you know, it changes over time, but right now I teach a course called Transitions in Adult Development. So it's basically the developmental psychology of adulthood, early, middle, and late adulthood. And I teach that to college students. It's a great class.
Nice.
And then I also teach career counseling theory and practice for psychotherapists. So it's a very different kind of course.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my current offerings.
Mm-hmm. Really nice. Now, how did you come to decide that you wanted to do, you know, because it's so balanced here, because you've got the esoteric, you've got the books or the self-help, then you have the academia. How did you come to know that this was the right path for you or choice for your gifts?
Well, partly I figured it out through my chart, for example, that I would be better off being independent, being self-employed, being a kind of contractor. That's related to the planet Uranus in my chart, which has to do with individuation and uniqueness, and another way, you know, some ways standing outside of the norm, so not being a typical therapist or a typical academic type. So there's that piece. I've developed this through my own interests in writing, in yoga and meditation, in music, in dream work. These are the practices I do for my own growth, and then the study of human development. I've been teaching that for more than 25 years, and it's the basis of the clinical work, it's the basis of the astrological work, and it's the basis of helping everyone, you know, at different stages of life make transitions in a conscious way.
Now, is this something you could help someone with, let's say, because you said you were able to look at your chart and see the best way for you to work? You could see that by the I would say probably house position and whatever sign Uranus is in. So we're looking at the chart, you would see the best way for somebody to work in the world.
That's what astrologers try to do. And by understanding ourselves, our own planetary patterns, and through years of study, we are able to read somebody else's roadmap, basically, and interpret it, interpret the symbols.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what is indicated or where this is pointing you in terms of occupational interest or understanding what's going on in your marriage or your search for a partner or in terms of housing and locational decisions, to understand the ups and downs, to see whether there's a long-term trend or whether there's just some short transitory influence that's causing a little turbulence in the cabin. So it's really everything I do is based on my own work on my own path, my own therapy, my own body work, and my own yoga and meditation practice, my own dream work, and that's how I am able to try and help someone else find their center. In the center.
I love that, because you're living, it keeps it, you know, very fresh and viable, because you're in your own process and you know the tools work as you're using it. It's not just something theoretical. You know, there's a, you know, practicum to it as well. I like what you're saying, too, about the astrology chart, because a lot of times it's looked at as only the personal or personal growth or focus, but to really look at the career, like you said, housing. So we are saying how somebody lives or where somebody lives, or what is it, or a lifestyle? Is it locational or lifestyle that you would look at in the chart?
Well, what I'm really trying to get at is this very practical. It helps us make mm-hmm. practical decisions with a sense of timing and appropriateness.
Mm-hmm.
And that can include issues like, is it a good time to move or is it not? I mean, some people will say, yeah, I really want to relocate, but there's nothing in the chart that indicates that this is a time to completely pull up
mm-hmm.
root, move somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing, when it's the right time, it will be really harmonious. Everything will work out. If it's not a harmonious mm-hmm. moment for that experience, you're going to meet obstacles and difficulties. That's just mm-hmm. the nature of it.
So much based on timing, isn't there, in our life?
Yes.
It seems, yeah, so much on right timing and understanding that. And what do you feel the key is into, you know, making better decisions in one's life, or more resonant or harmonious decisions?
That's a beautiful question. I mm-hmm. think one has to be in harmony with oneself in that decision, and feel that the universe intends it. The universe wants it. I want it. The universe wants it. So there's a rightness, and there's a kind of support from life for that decision. It's not a struggle.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah, and what you're saying too, to me, brings up that it goes back to, you can't know that really unless we take the time to reflect, to contemplate, meditate, some form of connecting in with ourselves. In my estimation, I don't know if you know any other tool, but it would seem that that would be a part of, is it would be feeling that the universe is with me? I would sense by what you're saying, there'd be some kind of, not just a mental or intellectual thought that this is the time, but there would be some kind of feeling, some kind of kinesthetic feeling that comes with that, so that I know and feel this is the right decision or right time for something.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It requires meditation and the honesty with oneself.
Mm-hmm. You know, and getting back to the mentoring relationship, and let's say we have a mentor, one that's in the fire, one that's doing their own work as well. Would that be something people need to look at? Is that mentor, teacher, therapist, are they honest? You know, are they honest with you? Would that be something that you'd look for? And then what else would you look for in that type of relationship?
You're saying that it's important to feel that your teacher is being straightforward and leveling with you rather than being deceitful and duplicitous or mystifying you.
I'm wondering, yes. Does the honesty play a role? Is that a role in who you choose and in that better decision?
Well, I guess one of the issues I take up in the book, In the Company of Sages, is the issue of trust. And
mm-hmm.
I believe that relationship is based on trust. I don't think the person, the teacher, has to be perfect, because most people aren't perfect. If they can be honest and straightforward about their limits, or when they don't know something, or if they have a hidden agenda, they can own that. That creates friendship and trust. And I mean,
mm-hmm.
one of my great teachers, and basically for those who haven't heard about this book, In the Company of Sages, it describes my work with different teachers. It describes their personal idiosyncrasies and the nature of the work we did. And one of them was a man named Alan Bateman in New York, a yoga teacher, and a very quirky individual. But he never let me down, in the sense of he always had honesty and integrity with me. And I was extremely grateful, and I could ask him anything. There really wasn't anything off limits. And
mm-hmm.
And he was very human and personable. Now, everybody's different in what they look for in a teacher. I want a personal relationship. I don't want just an impersonal figure who won't talk to me. That doesn't work as well. Even Swami Muktananda, when surrounded by hundreds of people, made a personal connection with me. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he knew me. I knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And you could approach him. It was terrifying, mm-hmm. but you could approach him.
Yeah. Yeah. Booming voice. That's true. Now, we've got two questions coming in the chat. One is, does Greg have a teacher therapist at the moment that he sees? Great interview,
I've been going to the same analyst for about 10 years. I've been going to the same analyst, mm-hmm. and before that, there was another great analyst who told me I needed to change to a different analyst for various reasons. So, yes, there's been that person in place for a long time. Muktananda was my meditation teacher, and he fully satisfied me. I mean, I learned to meditate, and I continue the practice, and that continues to inspire me. So I haven't sought another meditation teacher in years. My Hatha yoga teachers, there's quite a number of them, but Judith Lassiter has been very important to me, and this man in New York, Alan Bateman. Then I had several astrology teachers. The three main ones were Mr. Takra from Venezuela, Dane Rudyar, and I've written a lot about him in my books. So I've described how what it was like to interact, to basically correspond with him. I only met him in person twice. And then the third teacher was Chakrapani Ullal, the famous Vedic astrologer from India.
He's been on the program.
1978, I've known him. God, close.
Wow, you've known a long time.
Seven years. Yeah, I met him in Bombay in 1978. So the dreams are my teacher. Jung and Marie-Louise mm-hmm. von Franz and Edward Edinger are my teachers. So a lot of it comes through reading and scholarship and admiring other writers. Those are some of the teachers.
Thank you. Yeah, I think just to keep open the reading, the research, the letting those new influences or allowing the influences in, so important.
My Jungian has been a wonderful teacher for me. So good. So well trained.
Plethora of books here, wealth of insight and inspiration. I think you've got great tools for people through the work that you do as well as your writing. We're winding out of time here right now, so I'm going
to
let people
people to look at In the Company of Sages, where I share some of my own experiences, including mistakes that I've made and a lot of things that I've learned. So I hope you'll enjoy that.
Thank you, Greg, for being on Awakening.
Thank you, Michelle.
And that was Greg Bogart. We've been discussing his most recent book, In the Company of Sages. You can find out more information on Greg and his work, as well as his upcoming workshop in the New York area by going to gregbogart.net and donmountain.com as well. Again, that was Greg Bogart, and we were discussing his recent book, In the Company of Sages. Wow, what a great program. Thank you all in the chat. Thank you all that have been listening. Have a great week, everyone. Rest of the week and weekend. You know, we're here every Wednesday, almost every Wednesday, but every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific. Now, the call-in number, 347-539-5122. Keep it on speed dial if you want to call and chat or ask a question. If you want any information on me, you can go to soulentrepreneurship.life, selfandlight.com, soullol.com, and soulinsightsforspiritledliving.com as well. And catch me on Facebook, Instagram, friend me, let's connect. And you can always email me questions, anything that you need to know at awakeningsradio@gmail.com. lovely program. Thank you all for being a part of it and making Awakenings part of this amazing community. It's not just a podcast, it's a community, a connecting and a sharing. And I appreciate all of you traveling these steps with me. So until next time, keep shining your light, sharing your insight, and of course, keep awake.
Awakenings broadcasts every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time. Archive shows are available on iTunes. For continued Awaken conversation and insights, join the Awakenings group on Facebook and visit Michelle's blog at soulinsightsforspiritledliving.com. That's soulinsights, the number 4, spiritledliving.com. Keep awake.